Welcome home. We are WNST, Tulsa, Baltimore, and Baltimore Positive. We're still available out on the AM dial. And of course, so we'll be bringing the Maryland Crab Cake Tour as well as the Oyster Tour. It's our 26th anniversary. I got to get rid of the 25th anniversary cupcake. All brought to you by friends at the Maryland Lottery. The Gold Rush Sevens Doublers are out. I'll have these to give away at Fadley's when the Cheat Stros come in a little later on this month. We're just gearing up this Oyster Tour. We're going to have 26 oysters, 26 ways, and 26 days for our 26th anniversary. That all begins when the Ravens kick off against the Chiefs. Many of you know my rock and roll heart. I've been traveling around with a bad back, chasing Sammy Hagar and Loverboy and Bryan Adams. And my God, I've been all the over the place. And then some bands come here. And, ever since I had Greg Hawks from the Cars on, I've let my rock and roll hair, they're brushing my rock and roll hair. So I let my rock and roll hair out when I have rock stars on. This guy happens to be my wife's favorite rock star, and he is performing at Ramstead on stage, where I always have a great time and a great seat. We love coming down to Annapolis. Maybe I'll see Westmore down there at some point on our Oyster Tour. Stephen Page, formerly of the Bare Naked Ladies. He shall always be a Bare Naked Lady, and we always titter when we say that around here. It is a pleasure to have you on the program, and really great to have you come into a room that's one of my favorite rooms, and dare I say, the Hawk Show with this band he put together up in Boston was one of the great nights of my young life. So living long enough to see you come back down and do tunes, music brings us all together, man. So welcome back to Annapolis, my friend.
Thank you very much. Nice to be back. And I love playing Ramshead on stage. I've played there a bunch of times over the last few years, and it's a really fun venue.
Well, the show's Monday, August 12th. If you happen to catch this afterward out on the interwebs, he'll be back again soon. So tell me what the show is. My wife is a huge fan, and I would always wind up at your shows. We have mutual friends through friendships through baseball. I haven't seen your solo gig. I've Googled you, but tell me about your career at this point, because so many people are familiar and maybe do a fly in and say he's what and where, and he's not with the band. And I know it's been a while, but what is a night with Stephen going to look like down at Ramshead next Monday?
Sure. So it's the Stephen Page Trio, which is kind of that's my main gig. I do full band gigs and I do solo gigs. And I have this group called the Trans-Canada Highwaymen, but this is not it. This is the Stephen Page Trio. So it's myself, Craig Northey from the band The Odds on guitar, who's one of my favorite people of all time, one of my favorite bands of all time, and Kevin Fox on cello. And we've been playing together as a trio since, I think, 2006. So quite some time now. Or sorry, 2009, rather. And so 15 years, pretty well. And we are kind of best pals. And what we do is we play a mix of all the old Bare Naked Ladies hits. You know, It's All Been Done, Brian Wilson, Old Apartment, those kinds of songs, Bare Naked Ladies deep cuts for the diehards, and then stuff for my solo career, because I've got five or six solo records. So, but the way I look at it is, like, it's like catching up with old friends. Like, I'm not gonna not reminisce about the old days, but I'm also gonna tell you a little bit about where I'm at, and hopefully that way people feel like I'm not just forcing the new stuff on them either. It's like, it's more like it's a conversation with the audience in a way. And it's a lot of fun, lots of laughs, and hopefully lots of songs people know.
So my wife's just, she's a big fan, and she went and Googled you up and said, his stuff sounds just like the old stuff. It sounds like Bare Naked Ladies. I'm like, well, of course it probably kind of does, because like it kind of sort of was. And listen, I mean, I'm old enough. I'm 55. I have former employees who work at other radio stations who I started their career. I see them on TV every night, all that. And they all often wonder, I'm like, not all bands are meant for it's really hard to be Rush. It's really hard to hold a band together over a lifetime. And I think I've read up on you, and I don't need the life story behind the music, but the notion that you wanted to do something differently anyway, so did I in my career, anybody that's followed my path over 30 mm-hmm. years. I mean, it feels like a joyous place you're in right now to be able to come out and do this music and do it on your own terms, the same way Sting's doing things on his own terms. And people don't ask him about the Police every 5 minutes, you know?
Well, I mean, I don't mind talking about the times in Bare Naked Ladies either, because I loved it. It was great. Like, it was 20 years of being in that band that I started with Ed Robertson, and it was a dream come true. And we worked our asses off to achieve what we did achieve. And I have amazing memories of it. But when it was time to leave, I mean, that was hard. That was a really tough time trying to figure out how to be a person and a musician and whatever else in a place that I'd only ever been a bare naked lady my entire adult life. Well, I started when I was 18. So late 30s, stepping out on my own, it was a confusing time, but it's been 15 years now. And I'm having the best time of my life. You know, I'm playing with people I love to play with. I have a really great kind of close relationship with the audience now, like between things like the Patreon that I run and these live streams that I've been doing since the beginning of the pandemic. I still do them basically just so I can catch up with people, with listeners who want to come and be part of, you know, my world, and I want to be part of their world. And it's a really fun place, and I get to do a lot of different kinds of projects. Couldn't ask for better. I mean, I'd be happy to have bigger audiences and more money, but you know, those are shallow things. As far as like my heart and soul goes, I'm doing great.
But I also think that when you branch out and, you know, Googling you up, you did a food show, you know, like you were doing different things and meeting different people and experiencing life a lot differently, and life on the road can, you know, tear bands apart, tear relationships apart, tear people apart, all of that. And you find this place when you get a little bit older to enjoy things maybe you hated 20 years ago.
That is true. And it's like stuff that I would have thought, oh, that's not for me. Even just ordinary things. Like I've never been an outdoors person or a physical fitness kind of person. My wife, however, loves to hike. Well, I like to be with my wife, so I'll go hiking with her. And I found that I enjoy it. I enjoy kind of connection with nature, enjoy the physical activity more than I ever thought I would. And it's because I'm doing it with someone that I want to be around all the time. And sometimes when you're in a band for 20 years, the last thing you want to do is be around each other 24/7, because you spend all that time sleeping on people's floors and then sharing a bus and then sharing a dressing room, learning to be adults together when you're kids. And when you come into new relationships as a more fully formed adult, you kind of have some boundaries and it's easier to kind of say yes to things.
Well, also your songwriting, right? And the way you write songs. And I would always, like, I met my wife 21 and a half years ago. Mm-hmm. You were her favorite band. And I'm like, they're a little bit of a novelty band to me, you know, like they have sing song, like kids would like it. And then I found you did a kid's thing.
Yep.
And that part of writing the way I would have written when I was 12. But I mean, there's a Canadian-ness to you and a sense of humor and the whole sort of Mike Myers sort of built into that Second City sort of humor that Rush didn't do funny songs. You know, Triumph didn't do, Brian Adams didn't do, they didn't do funny. You did fun songs. And then I think maybe you get older and experience life a little different. Everything's don't have to rhyme and they don't have to make you say underwear and things like that. You can write differently when you get older.
Sure. I mean, even then, you know, like, Geddy Lee did do Take Off to the Great White North with Bob and Doug McKenzie.
He did.
So there's always room for a little bit of comedy in
there.
You
calling me a hoser?
Take Off, you hoser. That was like one of my favorite. I ended up signing with my management is SRO Management, same people who've managed Rush for all those years, Ray Daniels.
Anthem, yes.
That's right. And so the reason I signed, one of the reasons I signed with them, I always told Ray that the reason I was signing was because they put out the Bob and Doug McKenzie Great White North album. I mean, that SCTV stuff was such a huge part of our growing up and just our kind of formation of what we thought was funny, what we thought was relevant. But we always...
Clever too, really clever.
Well, and that's it, and clever, but there's also like, there's heart to that stuff as well. And that's, I think, a big part of what the Bare Naked Ladies were, was this mix of like, you can take it on whatever level you want. You know, if you just want to come and like, you know, dance and goof around, we're there for that. If you want to get like a little more heavy, we can also do that too. And, you know, we always compared it to just kind of a friendship in that way. But when you're, as you get older and you're a solo artist and you're not bantering with somebody else on stage necessarily, you can get a little more introspective. And just, you know, as a listener, I listen to a lot of music. So I just learned from the more music I've listened to, the more musicians I've played with, the more confidence I've gained as a writer and as a performer.
What's different about being Canadian all these years? What could you say about that? Every time I go to Canada, and I go often, and I almost went this week chasing Brian Adams up way, way north in Quebec, because he was doing these really crazy festivals and in a way, I mean, really places that I would never get to go. And I've got some wanderlust about me. I love coming to Canada. I wear a Canada hat. Sometimes you can pretend to be Canadian when you're away and people don't ask you about Donald Trump, which I don't like answering those questions. Never did from 16 to 20. But the part of being there, I always feel like I'm in a different place. And being American, I always feel sort of strangely welcome. Maybe it's because I have the Geddy Lee thing going on. I'm not sure, but there is something about I always feel welcomed, and I'm always looking forward to going to Toronto or to Ottawa or any. And I love hockey as well, but there's something about Canadians coming to America that always feels like they're Canadian. They're a little different.
That's true. I think, Canadians, by being a smaller country, by being underdogs, for example, like we're watching, the Olympics are on right now. And I was thinking about this, like how Canadians watch the Olympics versus how Americans watch the Olympics. Americans watch the Olympics with the assumption that they're going to win, that, because we are the biggest and best country in the world, the most with the most resources, and we better win this thing. And Canadians are like, we used to joke that our chant was go for silver, but it's not even so much that. I think people, because Canadians feel so much like underdogs and unseen by the rest of the world, that they take a lot of extra pride in their achievements. But they're also good. I think they're good at listening and watching the rest of the world. And that's why you have so many great Canadian, like the Canadian musicians. People think about musicians of the past who were synthesizers of American roots music, the Band being the best example, but Neil Young as well, and Gordon Lightfoot, so on. We had people who listened to American music and made it their own by kind of being observers of it. And then you have these comedians, all the SCTV people, and Jim Carrey, and Kids in the Hall, and so on, who are great observers of the human condition and of modern culture and can satirize it from afar. Where I think, and then you have people like, you want to look at somebody like Bryan Adams, who kind of typifies kind of the classicness of rock, a pop rock, because you can be a little bit away from it in order to observe it and mash it all together. Another little fun fact for you. So I was telling you about the Stephen Page Trio, Craig Northey on guitar from the band The Odds. The drummer in The Odds is also the drummer for Bryan Adams. Pat Stewart is Bryan's drummer, and he plays on a bunch of my solo records as well. So you do get a little Bryan and Stephen Page crossover with Pat Stewart.
He threw me a stick one time. Our guest is Stephen Page, formerly of the Bare Naked Ladies. He is performing with his trio, as well as Dennis Shockett and Cliff Hill is a Starbucks. Dennis Shockett, local folks here. It's August the 12th at 7:30. It's down at Ramshead on stage. You know all about it. It's a great little room down there. We're talking some Canadian culture, Canadian music. So I own a radio station, 26 years, AM radio station here. When last time I was in Toronto, I don't know, maybe about 2, 3 months ago, I was at Massey Hall when Getty pulled out Alex back at Christmas time. So I was trying to go over to Henderson and grab a Rush beer and all that stuff. But when I drive right across the border, I hit Niagara Falls, even the Peace Bridge in Buffalo, because I usually fly in there and flash my passport when I have it. And I changed the radio station, and radio in Canada plays Canadian music. So I love me some April Wine and some Honeymoon Suite and some Bare Naked Ladies, and just when I cannot not listen to radio when I'm in Canada. And you're proud, you're featured on there, but also bands like the Tragically Hip that broke in America because of things like that, I think, right?
Sure. Yeah, the fact that, like, I think Canadian radio, if they didn't have to play Canadian music, wouldn't. And the Canadian charts would look exactly like the American charts. And right now that we have, there are tons of pop acts, everybody from Drake and The Weeknd to Shawn Mendes, they're all over the place. There's Canadian acts who are in the top of the charts. But look back in the 80s and there weren't. There are very few. And so back in the 70s, the Canadian government came up with a plan to kind of bolster the Canadian music industry. And it really helped. It created this sense of, like, where you have this Canadian star system, and many of them cross over into international success. But others are really, they make their living at home. And that should be everybody should be able to make a living in their home country. The Tragically Hip being the best example of that. They did pretty well in the US, but they were God tier in Canada. They were, the biggest band in the country, and people speak and think of them with a lot of reverence.
Steve, I gotta tell you, if I don't talk to you about Kevin Hearn and my wife's had leukemia twice, he was part of, she was looking for people who had survived, like, quite frankly, because we didn't know a lot of people. Chuck Pagano, that was the Colts coach then, is a friend of ours, has always been a friend of ours. He gave some life advice, but what would you say two decades removed from that, and everything that happened with Gordon, the tragically hip, and Kevin's role in that. And if people haven't read about it, please, there's just Google it and you can read up on it. But there's a level of courage that you saw every single night around you, at, you know, in the middle of a rock and roll act and trying to hold together things that weren't all tight. It never comes at the right time, but it's an amazing story of perseverance right in front of you. And I know you keep a friendship with him.
Yeah, Kevin, I mean, he got sick when we were making Stunt, which would then go on to become our biggest album in 1998, and was diagnosed with leukemia right before the album came out. And it was really dire. And he had a stem cell transplant, which was, you know, fairly new science at that time. And it took a long time for that to actually, you know, kind of kick in and for him to get better. His body fought against that transplant really hard, and he was very weakened and couldn't do most of that tour with us. We had a good friend of ours, Chris Brown, fill in for most of that tour. And then Greg Kirsten, the great producer, came in and filled in for Kevin in another section. And Kevin would come back and basically do what he could, which was early on, not much, you know, a few songs, and then he'd be too exhausted. But, you know, we waited it out. And thankfully, he had an amazing team of doctors and overcame. But that was a good long journey of recovery for him. And every time he came out on stage, you know, the amount of energy and strength that it took for him to do that was astounding. But also, music is, that's where he lives. You know, he's such an incredibly musical person that it would have been cruelty to not encourage him to come out and at least express himself musically when he could.
Stephen Page is our guest, formerly the Bare Naked Ladies. He'll be down at Ram's Head on stage. Hope everybody goes down and checks that out. So at this point in your life, how many shows do you want to play? What's the ideal range? Because as I went through this and saw, hey, he had an eating show and he's doing this and he's done that. He's got awards. He's living a happy life. We all like to make more money, play stadiums, as you said, but there is a point where, like, you get to pick the life that you want at this point and go out and play. And after COVID, I've talked to so many musicians that COVID really changed a lot of different things for folks, either an appreciation for this or, hey, I'm done with it to some degree.
Right. And then also post COVID, things got a lot harder. Like things got more expensive. Renting things like buses and vans were harder to do and more expensive and harder to come by. A lot of like bus drivers retired. All those kinds of like the little kind of nitty gritty infrastructure stuff changed. Airlines became less reliable, which means you've got to fly in the day before your gig rather than on the day of your gig, which means you have to pay for hotels the day before. Everything's more expensive, except in my case, except for concert tickets. So I'm kind of making the same money I was making, but paying a lot more to do the shows. So the idea of going out and doing like a 3-week tour or a 6-week tour ends up becoming less cost effective than just going in and doing one or two or three nights in a row and then going home, which means you spend a lot of time in airports and cars and vans. Luckily, I love being around the people I work with. You know, and I still do probably 150 gigs a year. So it's a lot of traveling. But right now, for example, I'm kind of working my way up until September, and my wife and I are going to take a vacation for a few weeks in September. And I'm really looking forward to that. But I keep thinking about it. Every time I go to work, I'm thinking I'm going to pack in all the work before I go on vacation. How lucky I am to have a job that I love doing. You know, no, I don't love saying going away from home, but I do also love playing to fresh audiences every night. So that's the trade-off.
Well, the other part of it is you get to eat in good places. So come on, Mr. Eating Show Guy. You know, once an eating show guy, always an eating show guy. You
true.
Know,
it's not,
and as you said, taking care of your health and trying to eat the right way. I'm doing this oyster tour. These people with the Oyster Recovery Partnership, I'm trying to educate folks because I do a crab cake tour, and I've been doing this to talk about branching out. I was the sports guy during COVID trying to hold business together and thought, crab cake's sort of like ping pong democracy, sort of like anybody can sit and have a crab cake and a beer, Republicans, Democrats, athletes, sure, whomever, local people. But this oyster thing, without oysters oxygenating the bay, we don't have crabs, right? And we have all these invasive creatures. So they think I'm going to eat like a dozen oysters a day every day for 26 days. And I'm like, can't do that. But I am looking for like a new way to make an oyster that I haven't eaten it, or some way that it's famous in some stew. And I'm going around doing this. So I've had a really good time with my crab cake tour. Do you miss your eating show?
I had a great time doing that show. It was a lot of fun. And you know, that show was called The Illegal Eater, and it was about eating like either foods that were illegal or things like moonshine and stuff like that that are in gray areas or illegal. But sometimes there were just restaurants that were pop-up restaurants in places you would least expect them, you know, places in the back of a bar, or the back of a store, or you know, at someone's house or those kinds of things. And it's the greatest way to get to know a city when you travel anywhere is through its food. I mean, Baltimore is by far no exception. And so, you know what, a great distinctive food town, especially you're talking about oysters, talking about crab cakes, like that's like, it's, you're talking my language. And I love that. I love the fact that there
Get a
is this
bib
kind
and a
of,
fork. Let's go, brother. You know, we're going to eat crabs. You just bring your hands. I mean, I know you work with your hands, but you know, you got to get dirty to have crabs. You know that.
I don't mind. I mean, whether I want to have crabs or not, we might have to go into a different conversation. But as far as like eating crabs, sure, I'm up for it.
All right. Well, come on in and we'll see you at the show. Not before the show. We got to make sure we keep you know, and but after the show, crabs for
Yes.
everybody. Thank you for your time. Really
Thank
appreciate it.
you.
You've been such a source. And whenever I see a rock star that's meant so much to me, I always say, do you know how, like, I had Rick Emmett from Triumph on, who I've been a Triumph fan forever, and I fanboyed out, and he's a baseball guy. And I'm like, do you know how much your music, like songs like Hold On and songs like Magic Power, like get people through tough times? Seeing my wife, anytime she's listening to your music, she's so happy. So
Ah,
you
it's
bring
wonderful.
that to her.
Thank you. Well,
Appreciate that,
thanks
man.
to her.
Well, she'll be bebopping with you on the 12th. Trust me.
Great.
Now that
Look
I've
forward
had
to
you
it.
on the show, she's coming to the show. The show
Excellent.
is on the 12th down at Ram's Head on stage. Stephen Page, formerly the Bare Naked Ladies, always the Bare Naked Ladies. He'll be performing. Dennis Shockett, Cliff Phyllis, the Starbelly will be there as well. Ram's Head on stage, do a great job down there in Annapolis. Make a day of it. Leave early. Go down to the capital of the free state and have some fun and say hello to Westmore while you're down there. I'm Nestor, mixing some music in with some sports. Luke is out of training camp. We got baseball on the brain and all. An election ahead. We got all sorts of things happening. We are WNST, AM 1570, Towson, Baltimore, and we never stop talking. Baltimore positive.